Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome into the Scani Johnny podcast. I am your not so humble host, Jonathan Barnett, Scani Johnny himself. I am here also with Aaron Cheddar Talk Lottom. How are you, Aaron?
Hi, John. What's going on, man?
Not much, but we do have company today.
What?
Lee Chekovich is here with us. How are you doing, Lee?
I am doing wonderful, guys. I'm glad to be here and so thankful that you guys can get me on here.
Yeah. So Lee hosts the Wisco Sports podcast or sports show. It's the Wisco Sports show, right? That you call it?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
I listen to it. It's a good show. He's got a couple good spreads. He gets it out at least twice a week, usually a review and a preview show for the weekend. Tell them where they can find you, Lee.
You can check me out. The Facebook page is The Wisco Sports Show. The Twitter is at Wisco Sports Show. Check out the Instagram at The Wisco Sports Show, or you can always send me an email, wiscosportshow@gmail.com.
And, of course, leading from that, then you can also find our show on Twitter at ScaniJohnny1, or you can find me at JBarn54. Aaron, give us your talk.
At Cheddar Talk, Cheddar like cheese, at Cheddar Talk.
That's the longest way of describing two simple words.
Well, at least we're not going to go into, like, Scottish lore again this week. We're not going to have our guest with that.
We don't know. We have a Chekovich here, so I don't know how much
Polish history
we'll get. And also, you can email the show at scanijohnny@gmail.com. So we got all those things up front. The other thing I want to mention is, of course, that we were played in. I do not mention this enough, but we were played in by Cars and Trucks. That's the music you were listening to. Go check out their albums. They're definitely available on iTunes. That's where I've downloaded a couple of their things. They're a great group, and they're a lot of fun to listen to out of Duluth, Minnesota.
Fine band. Tony's got a good group up there.
Duluth, that's a lovely place. I love Duluth.
Yep. Yeah, and of course, we all know it is actually Duluth.
But we do what we can. Lee, I used to live up in Duluth. That was behind enemy lines for a while up in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
And then I just recently relocated from Duluth down to Janesville.
Nice. Oh, so you went all the way down south.
The entire length of the state.
So you're almost in enemy territory again.
Again, yes. it's a whole other argument I have to have with people.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but unfortunately, at that point, it's the enemy.
It went from you're the losingest, winningest team ever to you're the Bears and you suck.
Before I got stationed in Charleston, South Carolina, I actually recruited in South Bend, Indiana. I totally understand where you're coming from.
Yes.
I mean, I was on the other side of that Chicago, and oh, yeah, tough times.
Yet I strangely found myself cheering for Chicago last night because I like the Vikings even less. So
yeah,
our mutual friend who we deployed with, who is my law partner, said root for the Bears because they'll be obnoxious either way, but Vikings fans will just go away if they start losing.
They do. They really do. That is correct.
It's like going to a Olympic diving meet and the Vikings start losing. They jump off the bandwagon that fast. It's ridiculous.
that was maybe a stretch there, but we'll take it. We are going to start.
One every 30 seconds.
Of course. And we will start ourselves today with Packers because we want to get our rant out first, right? As is tradition on the Scani Johnny podcast, we're going to start with our anger and move ourselves towards a better weekend and a better week as we move forward here. But I think the first thing that I just want to briefly say is there was a weird collection of stories going out that Jordy Nelson had retired, but none of those were carried by like CBS or NBC or ESPN, and that hasn't been confirmed. He was inactive this week. I just want to say with 25 catches after 11 games now, 11 weeks, 25 catches, 353 yards and 3 touchdowns, they were right. And everyone has to admit they were right to let him go. He is behind in guys like Martavis Bryant and was it Brandon LaFell right now. And that's what they're going to roll with instead of Jordy. So I love you, Jordy. But yeah, the Packers, by the way, everybody, they got that one right. This was the time to let him go.
So mark it up as one thing they did right this year.
Right.
Now, do you think it was because he has Derek Carr and it's that offense? Or do you think if he had that connection with Rodgers, that it would be a different story? I think it was absolutely, you're right, it was the right call because you cannot pay the man $10 million. You can't.
I think the other thing is if you looked at, you're watching the old 22 last year, and if you don't want to pay for that, people, again, Andy Herman and Ben Fennell, great Twitter follows, they'll give you a bunch of that sort of look, but teams were not playing Jordy deep. They were playing him short, waiting for him to cut off routes because nobody was afraid of his speed last year. He definitely had the look on his routes that nobody was afraid of him, and that's why he wasn't getting the ball. He was running the routes the same, but nobody was afraid that, you know, if he was going to either run deep or do that little look back in that he was so great at, everybody sat on the look in because they weren't afraid he was going to burn him.
I'm more to Lee's side, and we've had this conversation before, John, is that I think he's kind of onto it too. Yeah, they're not going to respect his speed, but I mean, the body of work of his demise came under Bert Hundley and then now under Derek Carr on a obviously tanking, even though they beat the Cardinals for whatever reason yesterday. But yeah, an obviously tanking Oakland team that it's just throwing away everyone. In that game against the Panthers where Aaron Rodgers was miracled off the IR for 1 week and then put back onto the IR soon after, if you remember correctly, Aaron Rodgers actually overthrew Jordy Nelson on a deep post where he burnt the secondary. And it was because he had Aaron Rodgers throwing it to him again. So I honestly think that he could possibly have helped the Packers if he stuck around, not for that kind of money, though, and more as a locker room guy than anything else, because God knows the Packers need locker room guys right now, because preening Aaron Rodgers, who's embarrassing the Packers with his body language on national television, needs someone to calm him down.
You could not be more true. Holy cow. That the whining after every – like when he threw that ball into the ground, that was his fault. Why was he looks around to try to find people, like the receivers. It's like, Equanimeous, what were you doing? It's like, no, Rodgers, you spiked that ball into the ground.
That's okay? Ridiculous, right? Because nobody calls him Equanimeous. Everyone just calls him EQ.
Yeah.
Yes, they can't get those words out in time.
But yeah, I know you're right, though. He had hands on the hips looking around like, what is this? You know, and like, and after the game, you're listening to a bunch of pundits like, the Packers defense couldn't stop anything. It's because they were dealing with three and outs all night long.
Yes.
Aaron Rodgers doesn't take any heat except for his body language. There was that play towards the end when it was a 3rd and 3. Aaron Jones was standing wide open in the middle of the field. Aaron could have ran the ball 3 yards because there's nobody in front of him. And again, I told John this in the middle of the game. We were texting back and forth throughout the game. I'm like, well, it's 3rd and 3. Here comes another 40-yard bomb. Let's just line it up and send someone down the right sideline. See if we can hit him in stride. Why not? Aaron Jones, we'll just let him, you know, he's just averaging 5 yards a carry, you know. Oh, he's just standing wide open in the middle of the field, but he doesn't trust him. He doesn't have good chemistry with him yet. He could have underhanded the ball to him. Hell, he could have ran 5 yards downfield and handed it to him. There was enough of a gap.
Yeah. Well, and it's weird because McCarthy was playing the numbers, right? I mean, that's what he said in his post-game interview. He was playing the numbers on that last drive when he decided to punt it. Well, how are you not playing the numbers by not handing the ball off to Aaron Jones? I mean, he's averaging six yards a carry. Give him the ball. They just completely did away with that the second half.
And here's some of the stats I thought were the most telling. Seahawks, I guess, they were 6 of 15 on third down and 2 of 2 on fourth down. But here's the thing. Rush attempts in the game. Seattle 35, Green Bay 13.
Oh, my.
13. 13 runs.
Total plays in the game. Seattle ran 69 plays on offense and Green Bay ran 48. Mm. Seattle sustained drives. They were willing to throw. They were throwing less yards per pass than they were running more, but they were sustaining drives, and that's the sort of thing that needed to happen to keep this going. Also, Green Bay had 5 penalties for 80 yards, Seattle 6 for 30. They had a bunch of stupid, just false starts all over the place that they were running around about. We were grabbing onto people and doing dumb things downfield and stuff, so ours definitely were far more costly. Aaron Rodgers was sacked 5 times in this game, and a lot of those are, you know, he's scrambling rather than throwing the 5 yard dump off. You can see running back standing 5 yards downfield. It was frustrating.
The Patriots apologist in me coming out again. It's that same thing. Russell Wilson beat the Packers with the same game plan that the Patriots used, that Aaron Rodgers should be doing, and that is, if it's not there, just quick dump it off. Mahomes was just doing that in the game before we came up here. It's Monday night football is going on too. Mahomes even dumps it off once in a while.
It made Sam Bradford look like a real quarterback. He was a real boy. You know, like when he threw short and completed passes, made it work. Yeah, he's got to do those sorts of things. And I saw one of the greatest jokes as Owen Reese, who does a lot of writing for Acme Packing as well as Bucky's Fifth Quarter, had a thing. He says, like, every Packers fan right now is like, look at Jack Cohn dumping off the ball just like Aaron Rodgers ought to. It's like, well, you know, he could do it every now and then, would be fine. Yeah, a lot of the Packers got an early lead because the defense spotted our offense the ball. You got the early touchdowns, got the early lead, and then just kind of, I've said this for years, there's not a single lead that Mike McCarthy didn't feel was safe. And I think that that's the harmful thing.
No, and the thing is, too, is that it should have been 21-0, and it was just like, excuse the hyperbole, but it was just like the NFC Championship game they lost, too. You know, it's like, hey, we got this big lead, and now we're just going to slowly give it back to Seattle, and then, oh, and then we're going to blame it on a 4th-and-2 punt. Actually, the 4th-and-2 punt doesn't bother me nearly as much as anybody else. Like, yeah, it was dumb. They shouldn't have done it. But there was a lot of other bigger problems that are just not, I mean, and the whole thing, the Packers defense sucks. No, they didn't. They didn't.
No.
For a long time. It wasn't until they got stuck out on the field 3 times in a row on short offensive positions in the 4th quarter. And then we're just getting the ball hammered down their throat. And once you're on your back heels, because you're inside, your interior is just busted because they've been just getting hammered all game long. No. The problem was the offense, and the problem was the quarterback.
Yeah, and we were able to move the ball on them all game long, it seemed. We just, at points, decided we were going to do it just a different way. We're like, oh, yeah, we were running, and we were throwing here, but let's just try to do something else, and it seems like it's just to make Rodgers feel happier about what he's doing out there. I don't know.
I mean, what do you think, Lee?
I feel like it's the same song and dance every single football game that they play. The first half, we always look good. We come out strong. And I swear I attribute that to scripted plays that we are, that the Packers are preparing for all week. They're like, okay, we have our first 20 plays. We're going to run them. Or if it's Mike McCarthy saying, well, let's throw a screen pass. They threw 5 wide receiver bubble screens in a row. I'm confused. Now, is it just me, or throughout this game, I just kind of felt from the get-go, I wasn't really worried. I was like, okay, you know what? Defense is playing good again. Offense is rolling. We're obviously going to get Aaron Jones involved. I mean, he had 142 yards last week. So let's keep it going. We're going to do this. And I was just like, the air was sucked out of me when we lost. I was like, wait, what? What? We lost? Unbelievable. Yeah.
It was definitely a frustrating game. Another one that they should have won, that something just weird went wrong. The road losses that they've had this year of, you know, having Montgomery take a ball out of the end zone for this fluke loss, having Rodgers just go hero ball on us again and try to get the touchdown on a play where first down keeps us going, takes time off the clock, keeps Seattle's offense off the field, and has a chance to get us that touchdown with 4 more plays towards the end zone if we want it. And he takes a sack instead, because he can't just take a dump off. It's just weird little things here and there. And it gets to my point, is that Mike McCarthy is a great coach. He's a very good coach. I don't think the problem is that he's lost it or he's a bad coach, but he's not winning this locker room, and they're not listening to him, especially Rodgers. A lot of those wide receiver screens you're talking about, I can't tell you the number of them, but several of them are those RPOs where he's just not going to give the pitch to Aaron Jones.
True.
He's going to throw it for 3 yards instead.
That's true. I don't understand why he could, because he's a huge proponent of Aaron Jones in the locker room. Whenever they talk about him, he's like, oh, we got to give him more involved, get him more involved. And if that's an RPO play and he is constantly dumping it off to Davante Adams, I don't know. Is he messed up in the head right now? I don't know if he's given up. He's looking for that galvanizing moment. I'll tell you what, the missed challenge towards the end there on that Tyler Lockett pass for 34 yards when the ball clearly moved. That was a big one for sure.
That one, or hey, how about the one where the guy actually never caught the ball and they called it a catch?
Kept running.
What was that?
And the ball kept moving the entire time.
I was like, turn to Holly, and I go, Holly, my dear wife Holly, I go, I'm like, they can't call that a catch. Like, there was never at any point, I'm like, if that's a catch, then we're in trouble. We're really in trouble. And I mean, that was kind of missed in the whole grand scheme of things. But hey, John, remember on the Common Man program?
Yes.
Program.
I love
that one soundbite they always used. I'm pulling my tickets. That was that was pretty much me about halfway through the 4th quarter of this game. And Holly was getting ready to go to bed. And she's like, she just sees me in my chair and she's like, so what's going on? I said, well, I think I just officially became a Kansas City Chiefs fan for the rest of the year.
Oh, geez.
'Cause this is hard. to watch.
You'll
this
make
is...
my sister-in-law very happy, at least.
Oh, I know. Emily will be. Yeah. Well, there's no lack of love in this Packer fans world for one Mr. Tom Brady and now one Patrick Mahomes, because he's just so fun to watch. So
he is. Wow. That is.
Yeah,
the
I would
new
love to. I'd love to see him. I would love to see him versus Drew Brees. That's. It might be. Could you imagine a Super Bowl that has 120 points scored?
Seriously. That's a shootout right there.
It would be 63-60 on a last-second field goal by someone.
Someone, because you can't name those guys. So
I think the Kansas City's kicker's name was Buttock or something. Jeez. He just missed it. Just missed an extra point, and then the
– Yeah.
Okay. Saints are on the third kicker this year.
Aaron, let's keep moving on here. The couple of bright spots, though, I do want to say the bright spots that we need to bring up is, of course, Robert Tonyan getting his first catch, first touchdown, and first giant play. I know we're all very happy at this podcast. He is officially our favorite Packers tight end. He's got some good hands, and that route actually was very smart at the end because both safeties were right there with him.
Yes.
And he cut between the two of them to get to the ball, got it high and at the right point, and made the play. He cut underneath one of the safeties back there to make that play. That was actually an exceptional route by Tonyan, who is the fourth and tight end out there. And, of course, we'll see what he gets now. Now Jimmy Graham apparently is going to try to play through a broken thumb.
Mm. That's tough.
Yuck.
Yeah, and apparently Mike Daniels also, that injury might take him out a couple weeks with his ankle. But on the plus side for the defense, at least Kyler Fackrell is going to be healthy.
Wow, what a banshee. Holy cow.
I think he is
you
now.
You don't know this, Lee, but John hates Fackrell.
You know, and to be honest with you, I was not a fan for the first 2 years either because he did literally nothing. I mean, he was a placeholder on this team, and I have no idea what happened. I mean, did he just turn 30? Because didn't he play for Utah State? So he's pretty old. He's older than most, right?
Yeah, I think they redshirted him 3 times already.
Yeah, and wow. But I mean, hey, whatever he's doing, keep doing it, man. Keep doing it, because that Minnesota Vikings offensive line doesn't look very good.
Right. No, I guess obviously the Packers saw something in him that no one saw.
Yeah, he's like the only player that was drafted by Ted Thompson that's still around that Goody hasn't gotten rid of yet. So
yes, exactly.
He was named to multiple all-conference teams as a senior, of course, picked in 2016. He's born in 91, so he's 26 now, which means. Ooh. Which means that last year was technically, mathematically speaking, his peak year. And this is the downside of his career, because we drafted him so late in his career already. And so that's kind of the problem. Is like, we are seeing the peak of Kyler Fackrell, and we better enjoy this, because he did make strides. And you have to say this, I've given him crap before. One of the sacks that has been credited to him this year is one where, in fact, if you watch the film, the quarterback is tripped by his own offensive lineman and fell. That was Josh Allen, just tripped by his own lineman and fell while that lineman was driving Fackrell into the ground, and Fackrell never touched him, but the ref threw the play dead. It's one of the greatest plays ever. Go back and watch it. It's amazing. But he's now had 2-3 sack games this season. One of them legit. This one was legit. He beat some guys out there, and that Seahawk offensive line is not good. But I didn't see Clay Matthews owning them.
No.
So, you know, I don't know what else to say on that. He's the only guy who had any sacks. We had 3 sacks as a team this week. So
are we still leading the league?
I can't remember if we're leading. I didn't check that out. Seattle had 5 sacks of Rodgers. We had 3 sacks of Russell Wilson. And if you're Russell Wilson and you're going through your head and you're like, I'm a majorly athletic, very quick, fast quarterback, and I get by on, we don't have any offensive line, but I'm super agile, and Kyler Fackrell brings you down 3 times, I bet you go to sleep at night just thinking about your life and where you went wrong and where do you go from here. For the Packers going forward from here, it's going to be it's going to be an adventure coming up the next one. They got Vikings next week in the Metrodome, and they have not been a good – not Metrodome. I said Metrodome. Yeah, no. Mm. Yeah, into that giant black monstrosity in the middle of the Minneapolis, where every other professional sports team in Minnesota has fled, so they can get to a better spot in the Twin Cities area. That's going to be tough. They have not been good on the road this year. I mean, three of these are road losses in New England, at the Rams, and now at Seattle. Three very tough places to play this year. I don't know. I just don't know how they're going to do against Minnesota. I'm not, I don't know. They got a chance at the playoffs, but that's not even my concern now. I want to see something happen to this team, and I just want to see some sort of positive movement at this point.
Right. I'm glad that the Bears did some heavy lifting for us and kind of beat them up on Sunday. That was nice. I thought it was going to go, it started off well in Seattle because Seattle was coming off a big game against LA and they got super beat up against LA. And it showed when the Packers came out, the Packers started winning. I thought it was going to be good. Well, at this point, I'm just not feeling anything good about the Packers right now. And maybe the Bears did beat them up a little bit, but at the same time, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to pull it off, especially in Minnesota. They have yet to win a game on the road this year. So, I mean, that's a big part of it. I think the Vikings might be set for a letdown, and it's Packers Vikings. You don't know what's going to happen. So I really don't think the Packers are going to win, but so like 247 Sports, I'm looking at this. They have an article that says, despite losing ways, Packers have clear path to the playoffs. Damn. And it's basically, they have to win every game from here on out and they'll be 10-5-1.
Oh,
you know,
that it?
And then, and you know, if they beat both the Bears and the Vikings one more time and Detroit, you know, they'll have a, what would that be, a 4-1-1 conference yeah. record?
Yeah, and our only loss being Detroit.
Don't bring that up. Awesome. But anyway, so I mean, I don't know, man. I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about anything else the rest of this year. I say tank it and get a top 10.
Yeah, because the Saints aren't doing us any favors.
They are not. Not. I was so excited for that pick. God.
This will be good. Maybe we can trade up if we don't even, you know, if we don't get everything, we can at least trade two first to get in the top 10 or something. I think that's about all the anger that I can deal
and
with.
And do what? And get us a Saquon Barkley that we won't use? I mean, we're not going to draft a quarterback. What if the number one overall pick?
If we could get a serious linebacker put next to Blake Martinez, who I think is a very good linebacker, but not great. That could be especially interesting here.
Blake is great at what he does. And
which
that
is tackling people 2 yards downfield.
Tackling everybody. So
yes. Downfield.
People don't get past him. Yeah, well, yes, John, but he tackles them. They don't get past him.
He's good. I'm not saying I said he's very good. I would like to have a great linebacker.
We need a safety.
Two yards downfield isn't bad on a run stop. If you could stop everybody 2 yards downfield, you'd be in good shape.
Yeah. Oh, I could do that playing behind Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, I think. But no, he's very good. I think he's great. I would love to have a great linebacker, like a serious Pro Bowl linebacker. And what we've got is a plussed up Schobert. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Great analogy.
Yeah. But we'll move on to some Badger news. And of course, as our sports talk, we try to get everything we can down in here in terms of all Wisconsin sports, because they all matter here. Men's hockey. Men's hockey let us down worse than the Packers this week, by the way. Playing at Ohio State at, of course, the famous Value City Arena in Columbus, Ohio. The Ohio State Buckeyes beat the Badgers 4-0 on Friday and then 3-1 on Saturday. In the Friday game, the Badgers lost 4-0 and outshot them 32-27. But Ohio State was 2-for-5 on their power plays, and Wisconsin was 0-for-6. They chased our goalie, Daniel Lebedev, gave up 3 goals and was chased, and Jack Berry came in and gave up the 4th goal. Saturday, though, they did get outshot 38-28, and they only got the 1 late goal, 3rd period goal, to stop from being completely shut out by Ohio State in 2 games. Got a power play goal from Sean, Sean Doogie. It was an interesting spelling on that. Got the assist from Jack Garniak and Josh S. We've called their names before. They're definitely some of the higher players on this line, and they've been successful this year, but not nearly enough to the point where this team's going to be one of those top 25, and they're not going to sniff the playoffs this year from what it looks like. Ohio State was, on the weekend, 4-for-12 on the power play. So that the special teams killing the Badgers here. Badgers were 1-of-11 on the power play. Jack Berry played the second game. giving up three goals. Not terrible, but not great. That definitely hurt. Badgers fell out of the top 20 last week to 22. They're not even getting votes this week. They're still...
That's bad hockey.
That's bad hockey. That's not how you play the game. Of course, the Minnesota Gophers, they split a weekend series with St. Lawrence. The mighty powerhouse of St. Lawrence. No. So, the split with
Lawrence,
Minnesota.
The only Lawrence I like is Jennifer Lawrence.
All right. Oh, what a hottie.
Fair enough.
Yes.
So, of course, now the split with Minnesota doesn't look quite as great as they appear to be the fourth or fifth best team in the state of Minnesota. Still, women's hockey was there to save us. Women's hockey in two games against Bemidji State, the Bemidji State Beavers, at home at Laban Arena. They won 5-0 and then 3-0.
Jeez.
Yeah, Lord. A couple great games there. Two goals by Sophie Shirley on the Friday game. Sophia Shaver had a goal on Friday and another goal on Saturday. They outshot the Beavers on Saturday 40-12. You just can't make that
right there.
That's like old school, like originally when they first had D1 and there was like three good teams. It was UMD. UMD was when they were winning a lot when women's D1 hockey first came to be, is what I was trying to say. UMD used to outscore my friend's sister played for Mankato State, and at one point Mankato State lost to UMD one season, and they lost 7-1, and that goalie for Mankato State still holds the all-time NCAA record for most shots defended in a game. she defended 83 shots.
Jeez.
And they're Minnesota State. She saved all except seven of them. So she has most saved and most faced in a game. And she still gave up seven, but of course that gives you 76 saves. So, yeah, good times.
So the Friday,
that's what that sounds like. I didn't realize that still happened.
Yeah, this team is ridiculously good. Bemidji's an okay team. They're not going to do anything much. This is where there is still a WCHA, by the way, that has a Wisconsin team in it. But yeah, they're still kicking around over there. Four goals in the first period on Friday in that 5-0 shutout. Four goals in the first period. Like I said, the other goals in the weekend, Delaney Drake, Britta Curl, Presley Norby, and Annie Pankowski all got goals in these games here. So that's how they go. 15 first place votes going to the Badgers women's team. Fantastic. They are 13-1-0 right now.
Wow, that's awesome.
Crazy good team. They don't have, like we were talking about, Clarkson has those crazy lines where they're just putting up lots of goals on single lines. Leading goal scorer for the Badgers women's team is Sophie Shirley. She's number 7 in the country with 9. Annie Pankowski.
So they're sharing.
Yeah, they're passing.
They're sharing is what you're saying.
Abby Roque and Annie Pankowski each have 6, tying them for 32nd. Abby Roque also is 9th in total points. She has 18 points in 14 games. Sophie Shirley is 19th. She has 15 points. They're getting the puck around. They're doing very well. That team is great. If you have a chance to go watch them at Laban Arena, they are a very good team. Go watch that team. It's a smaller arena. I mean, the men's team plays in the Kohl Center. They can get 18,000-19,000 people in there. The Laban Arena is good, like 3,000 or something like that. They'll get 2,200 people in there at night, but go watch that team. They're very, very good, and there are going to be several Olympians off of this team right here. So.
All right, and an update from up north in the WEAC. UW-Superior continues to have a rough season on both the men and women's sides of the puck. The women this last weekend lost on Friday. They had a two-game set with UW-Stevens Point. They lost on Friday 5-4 and then tied 3-3 on Saturday night. That was at Westman Arena in Superior, Wisconsin. And then the boys also had a win on Saturday. They beat Finlandia, who's, in case you didn't know, they're from Hancock, Michigan. That's right. That's opposite of the side that Michigan Tech is on. And then they lost on Friday night. And this is embarrassing. I don't even know how I can. They lost 5-3 to Northland College in Ashland, Wisconsin, which is a small private liberal college. I don't even know what their enrollment is. So
several people who went there.
Tough weekend overall there, John, for our friends up north at UW-Superior. So
I think they're so much better than us that they're superior.
You know, hey, we have a large audience up there, John.
We do. We do indeed.
That's my school. Come on.
That was always the joke when the UW-Superior would come in and play, because I grew up in Point, as you know, and when the UW-Superior would come down, UWS and UWSP would play each other, and we'd be like, my mom would just like, oh, they think they're so much better than us that they're superior.
So Lee, how many times have you made it up to a UW-Superior hockey game? Let's be honest.
I'm going to say zero times. Aaron, zero times. Unfortunately, yeah, I have not been up there, but I've heard it's lovely. All 3 days of summer.
3 days of summer and all one block of a campus that we had.
Winter it's and small. 3 days it's of small. Bad skiing.
So my wife went to Lake University. I believe it was Lake University up in the UP in Michigan.
Okay. Yeah.
And she said they had one sport, hockey. That's it.
Yep,
because it gets too cold. Too cold.
No. Yeah. And you think that's, and everyone says that Superior's up there. The UP, that's.
Whoa.
I mean,
well, NMU.
You get to Rhinelander and it's still another hour and a half before you're there.
Well, you know, I live sometime in Iron Mountain, Michigan.
Home of the
Iron Mountain Mountaineers and the Kingsford Flivvers, named after the fact that they made parts for the Model T, which is nicknamed a Flivver. So they were the Kingsford Flivvers.
And remember, those are also on Highway 2, which also on Highway 2 are the US Ashland Ore Dockers and the Hurley Midgets in the Wisconsin.
The Hurley
side.
Midgets, yes. They are still called the Midgets for some reason.
Yes, they are. And the Ashland Ore Dockers are still called the Ore Dockers, even though there's no ore docks left in that town anymore.
Yeah. If you go north, though, you hit Marquette, which is actually up on the lake there, on the backside of the one peninsula on the top there.
Quinoa Peninsula.
All right, there you go. And that's where NMU, Northern Michigan University, is. And my mom spent some time going to school there when we lived in Iron Mountain. But, yeah, the NMU Wildcats, I still have a practice jersey that I wore when I played in Iron Mountain. That was an NMU Wildcats number 33 Barnett jersey. And my daughter wears it now. It's amazing. It makes me very, very happy. But, yeah, they are a D1 hockey program and D2 that's football. There. Because somebody from my school went and played D2 football up there at NMU, the Wildcats.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. The UP has more D2 schools than Wisconsin does.
I don't know.
Think about it. Because Michigan Tech's up there, Northern Michigan Tech's, University, and Lake Superior College are all up there, and they all have D1 hockey schools and D2 football programs.
Yep. In terms of D3 men's hockey, here's the fun point for Wisconsin, point of pride. UWSP now ranked number one in the nation, 17 of 20 first place votes. St. Norbert's College over by Green Bay, they are number three. And UW-Eau Claire up to number five.
That's
so
odd.
Three of the top five teams are Wisconsin teams right now. The Pointers are 6-0-2. That's pretty good. Over the weekend, they had a 5-2 win over previously number seven ranked Marion College. And then they had a 1-1 tie playing on the road at St. Norbert's. So, great weekend for UW men's hockey. Definitely having a great, great season. It's a lot of fun to watch them. I'll definitely take my daughter and my son and all my kids out there at some point again. We took them out there last year. Watched another game over at KB Willett. I used to live right across the street from KB Willett. We used to watch the Pointers play on local cable access until the end of the second period, and then they would let anyone in for free to watch the third period. So we'd walk over and watch live.
It's great.
It was great. Awesome. That was a lot of fun growing up like that. Pointers host the holiday tournament over the weekend. Nichols, the University of St. Thomas, where I went for 1 year, and they consider me an alumnus for the purpose of asking me for money. And Utica will all be in town to play in a tournament with the Pointers this weekend. So, another great, great bit of hockey here for the weekend, too. UW men are going to be playing over in Michigan in Ann Arbor at number 14 Michigan. And the women will be staying home at Laban Arena and playing Harvard.
So. Yes.
That's our fun roundup of hockey. We'll get into now UW basketball, who had a barn burner of a game this week. Of course, you know that you just throw out the schedules when the Houston Baptist Huskies roll into town. You throw out the schedules because it doesn't matter how good they look on paper. Houston Baptist is not a real basketball program.
And so. where is Houston Baptist from?
Not Houston, Minnesota. Houston, Texas.
Oh, like proper Houston, Texas.
Yes. Which is where you think Huskies come from.
Yes. You know when they have a name like that? That was a name that's a replacement name for a once offensive name.
Oh yes, absolutely. Like dog. Dude,
wait,
the dog.
Yeah.
In Texas?
Yeah.
The cut and shoot
Texas Warriors. What? No, that doesn't make sense.
No.
Yes.
So it was a 96-59 smashing of the team, and it was basically the Badgers got up big and stayed there. They had five players get into double digits. Hap had 15. Nate, is it Reavers? I don't remember how to say his name. He had 15.
You were talking about him on his show.
Yeah. Trice had 12. Charles Thomas IV had 10.
Finally.
Yeah. And Brevin Pritzel led the team with 17. Hap had 12 rebounds. Thomas added 6 more. Kyle Iverson, 5 rebounds to be third. The team shot 60.3% from field goals, 38.9% from three. They were playing the sorrowful sisters of the poor, essentially. But being 3-0 with that win against Xavier now under their belts, this team is now ranked 25th in the nation and about to go play Stanford. How good do we feel about this team right now?
So this win against Houston Baptist, guys, where does that rank in the quadrant thing? You know, for the wins, like we were talking about last week with Xavier being, if they won, it was good, but if they lost, it'd still be okay.
Is this one of those
that if they win, it's bad, but if they were to have lost, it'd be worse? What do you think, Lee?
I was told there was no math.
Yeah, they probably just throw that out. I mean, Houston Baptist. But I did hear you last year or last episode talk about the quadrants, and I agree with that. I mean, I think that's one of those things where, you know, you win, you beat a Xavier team, and that's solid. But if you lose, it's gonna, you know, is it really gonna be something that they look at later on down the road? But yeah, I don't know. Houston Baptist. That's a tough one to call. But I do like the way this team is playing. I mean, last year was tough for them. They were very, very young, and they were, you know, Davison had the shoulder issue, and Trice was out. But I feel like guard kind of has this team back on the right path. Shooting 60% definitely helps. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, the battle for Atlantis. We'll see how it goes. We've had some pretty good luck down there. So hopefully they keep it going.
What do they call it? The bad boy mowers battle.
Bad boy mowers.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that before, but apparently they're doing all right.
The court that they play on. Whenever they play in the Battle for Atlantis, I feel like the court, the ceiling is really, really low. And you know, I played basketball in high school, and just playing in a ceiling that's really low, I feel like I would, every time I took a jump shot, it would hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Irrational fear.
That's right.
What? Irrational fears are fine.
I was a wrestler. I just take my shots at basketball players whenever.
Yeah, but I just feel like the first thing too is that, like, there's the problem of which show was it? Was it? It wasn't Heller this week, but they were talking about like the battle for Atlantis. The winner should literally get to walk home with Atlantis, and I don't believe that actually happens.
No. What was that one up in Idaho? You said they had to walk home.
Oh yeah, the Battle of the Palouse, Idaho and Washington State. The loser walks home.
Right.
That's the greatest tradition ever. I don't know. Why don't they do that much anymore?
But yeah, walking home from the Battle of Atlantis, I think I like that. How far is it? 12?
Well, it's over water, so that's step one.
Okay. So since Jesus Christ isn't on the team, nobody will be walking home with
it's
that.
It's really right? not. But
this
team,
need a boat.
It's good to have good guard play back. Like Lee was saying, they were playing without Trice last year. It's really tough to try to play in the NCAA without your starting guards. They had two of them out. It's just hard to kind of go anywhere. And they really just had no chance last year with the amount of injuries they had to deal with. Hap looks good. They've got a lot of decent height on this team, and they got good shooting. So we're just happy to see this all looking good here. And I feel very confident in this team. I don't think it's that particularly strong a year in the Big Ten. You know, is Michigan and Michigan State look good? And I don't know if there's a lot else out there in terms of serious competition from the Big Ten this year right now. At least that's our thoughts here in terms of what we got for basketball. We do have brief little touch here in terms of Brewers news. The first things, of course, what everybody is super excited about is new pitching coach.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Ah, biggest story of the week, John. Good call.
Ooh. For the Brewers, of course. Chris Hook moved up to pitching coach. And then Steve Carsey has been made the bullpen coach. Andy Haynes added as the hitting coach, which is, of course, the greatest job, as Homer will tell you on the Homer and Thunder show. The greatest job in all of sports. You like go up there, and when the ball comes in, you should hit it. You know,
yes.
Tell professional baseball players how to hit a baseball.
When the ball's there, swing, get into it and hit it over the fence if possible.
But the greatest news.
Did we
news,
take that coach, the hitting coach from the Cubs?
I think we moved everybody up. Did we take? I guess I didn't see that part. I thought most of the other players. I know the pitching coach and the bullpen coach, were just moved essentially up through
moved
the
up,
system.
Wasn't the hitting coach from the Cubs? I thought we still.
I think that might be right.
Coach from the Cubs.
Andy Haynes might have come over. I know that the pitching coach and the bullpen coach were promoted upwards. I think you're right in terms of the hitting coach, Andy Haynes.
Yeah, but at so least whenever we can take from the Cubs and gain ourselves, I love it.
We'll trade him back for Chris Bryant if they want.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
But the other great news, of course, is that Christian Yelich named the National League MVP this week, just as, of course, our own Aaron Flotham predicted or something like that. Aaron, take it away.
Sorry, on the Yelich thing, I was just trying to see if he got pulled from the Cubs yet or not. Yep, you were right. Good job, Lee. The big apology of the week to everybody is I thought for sure that the Baseball Writers of America and their infinite genius, after having snubbed both Stearns and Council for awards, I've been recorded digitally on the show saying that Major League Baseball hates the Brewers. They hate everything about the Brewers. They would prefer if everybody not named New York Yankees, Los Angeles Dodgers, San Francisco Giants, or Chicago Cubs just went away. You know, just be around long enough so those teams can beat you. And then come postseason, go away. Oh, Red Sox, too. Excuse me. I left them out. And I thought for sure that Yelich, despite absolutely destroying Baez and Arenado for MVP stats, I thought for sure they were going to give it to Arenado. And I would like to apologize at this point for being short-sighted and just expecting the worst, even though Yelich was obviously MVP. Congratulations. See why you had a hell of a season, and thank you for the memories. John, back to you.
Is CY a thing people call him?
I don't know.
I like CY. I like Yelly. What do you think about the Baker Mayfield Christian Yelich guy love going on there? That's pretty
good. Was fun. I like that.
I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it. It's fun. Baker Mayfield's a fun character, too, but. Yeah, no, congratulations, Christian Yelich. He deserved it.
Absolutely.
And anybody who wants to bang on him for having a bad run towards the end of the playoffs, hey, we probably wouldn't have been in the playoffs without Christian Yelich. So
he carried that team in so many different ways, and it was the amount of RBIs he was able to collect as a second man in the lineup is phenomenal, just phenomenal. That he was, I mean, the number of times it was like we could just count on the game would start with two guys on base. It was crazy to start that way. So it was a great year, and we're looking forward to having him for a while yet. We got him under contract for a bit, so it's great fun. We've reached the point of the program, too, where I'm going to rely heavily on the other two individuals here as we're getting into Bucks coverage. They did have the loss to the Grizzlies, 116-113, but then beat the Bulls, and then apparently today also beat the Nuggets for a second time in about a week and a half. So, Aaron, how you feeling about this team right now? And Lee, I guess, you know, make sure you stop him whenever you feel necessary.
Oh no, I'll let Lee in. I'll let Lee in on this one. I just have some points here. Yeah, I know. Looking up just before the game started, before the podcast started here, and seeing that because they were down for quite a while. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but they were down for a good chunk of the game, and they came back and they won 104-98 tonight, which puts two games in a row. Now, of course, they're 12-4, 8-1 at home. That stinker on Tuesday, I had just a couple of notes. So the Grizzly game Wednesday 14th, Memphis led most of the game, all except for a couple of minutes in the fourth. Of course, they ended up prevailing 16-13. Marc Gasol, that guy's a beast. I would love to have Marc Gasol on my team anytime. What do you think?
So fundamental. So clutch.
Yeah. It's just like, well, him and his brother both are really good. Paul, of course, getting a lot more attention. Giannis had a good night, 31-9. Middleton, 25-5. Connington, again, off the bench, this guy can score, pass, rebound. He's a good bench player. He had in the Grizzly game, he had 16-6. But here's the kicker: is that the team's three pointers on the game, 9 for 35 for 25%. You're not going to win with that.
No, not going to get it done.
Especially the way that they've been shooting the three really well this year. And, it showed in just the next game. Okay, so, and also, too, it can kind of be written up. They played the Grizzlies right after coming back after a West Coast trip. That's, what do they call that? The Ma scores, the sleep thing?
Yeah, it was four tough games, right. For sure.
Right. And going 2 of 2 against them, of course. And then on Friday, of course, the Bucks welcome to town the Bulls from Chicago. Now, I haven't – I was up at deer camp in northern Wisconsin there, chasing around the northern Wisconsin white-tailed deer with a rifle trying to shoot it. So I actually didn't get to watch the game because we don't have power up there or reception or – basic hygiene skills. So I wasn't able to watch a game. Did you catch it at all? Or
I caught a little bit of it. It was like from the get-go. It was kind of one of those things where the Bucks came out flat. You know, we started out pretty flat and weren't hitting the shots. The Bucks had an opportunity. They saw it. They came out. They had a lead, but it was literally a lead. And it was like the Bucks spotted them 18 points.
Right.
And then we still came out and ended up blowing them out. So the shot started falling. Giannis again taking over like he usually does. Bledsoe, Brogdon, Giannis, and Middleton. That is a very, very solid core of players right there.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And I think they're one, maybe not this season, because the Bucks are a lot like the Brewers, in my opinion. They're kind of one season ahead of where they should be right now. Maybe an off-season signing, even an in-season trade. This year, they're one good superstar away from being really legit. Because
I agree.
Middleton and Bledsoe, they're all first-round draft picks. Okay, mm-hmm. The NBA, everyone except for Draymond Green is a first-round draft pick, right? But, Bledsoe was pretty highly rated coming out of college. And so, but to your point, the Bulls came out and outscored the Bucks 40-27 in the first. But then third period rolls around, Bucks roll out a 46-point frame against a 17-point Bulls frame, and it was just all clinical from there. So what I wanted to know was, so the stadium was, I got some stats here about that I want to get into on some other stuff too. Fiserv was packed, 99%, as you would assume with the Chicago game. When you were watching, did the Chicago fans take over like how they take over Miller Park?
Not as much. I didn't see as much there because I think it was just the excitement of number one, the Forum. I mean, that's a brand new stadium. That stadium is beautiful. So Milwaukee
the court is awesome.
This doesn't look so awesome. I mean,
the deer antlers inside the three like that.
Yes, that kind of dark shaded. It looks so nice. So I just think the people of Milwaukee are genuinely number one. They're still on a high from the Milwaukee Brewers. And they walk straight into a brand new stadium. Their team is one of, if not the best in the NBA right now. So they are packing house. And when Jabari Parker comes back, and it's one of those guys where we let go, the Milwaukee fans are going to tune in and say, okay, how's he going to do? How's he going to do? It's the return of Jabari Parker.
Right. And you're right, too. Toronto's technically still has a better record because they've got two more games that they've won. But the Bucks are dominating them in the points per game. But and also too, I mean, it's the Bulls. It's not the 90s Bulls either. They have not really been relevant in a while. Joakim Noah and his stupid hair. But so on the game, they outscored the Bulls in the second half 78-41. They erased a 22-point deficit at one point. Giannis, his stat line, 23 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists. Middleton, 23, 10, and 8. Bledsoe, 25, 4, and 6. And Connington off the bench, only scored 2 points, but had 7 rebounds and 4 assists for a plus 14. And the team's 3-point percentage, remember, after shooting 9 of 13 for 25% against the Grizz, go 18 for 34, that's 42%. And then you're talking about attendance, this new stadium and or the new forum, the Fiserv Forum in downtown. On the 14th against the Grizz, they with a capacity of 17,500. They brought in 16-8-17 for a 96% fill rate against the Grizzlies. And then against the Bulls, 17-3-41. That's 99%. They filled all except 59 seats in that arena.
That's awesome. That is excitement right there for the town of Milwaukee.
That's actual butts and seats, too. Now, granted, it's probably above 100 less than that. But if you've ever been in an arena with 17,000 seats and there's only 100 people not there, that's insane.
Yeah, you know that place got loud in that second half.
That's like Lambeau against the Packers or Bear or against the Vikings or Bears. So.
Lambeau against the Packers.
Yeah. So yes. And then for the Bulls, of course, Jabari, nobody cares. And this is the one I'm tracking. The guy that the Timberwolves gave away to get that Butler guy, Zach LaVine, who's still in the top 10 in scoring in the league, points per game, was 15-5-4, but went 6-for-20 from the field and 1-for-5 from 3-point. And get this, folks, against the Bulls, 4 of the 5 starters didn't even shoot a free throw. Zach LaVine was 2-for-3. The other 4 starters were 0-for-0.
That's amazing.
That's good defense.
Starters, good defense. Yeah, the Bulls starters only shot 3 total free throws. And my last thing before I let everybody go. So over in the, as long as we're talking NBA and former NBA players and former Milwaukee Bucks draft picks, Dellavedova, DNP again tonight. He was against the Bulls, and I believe he was against the Nuggets. Back in 2011, there was a player out of BYU. He won the Naismith Award for Best College Basketball Player. He's a hotshot shooter from BYU named Jimmer Fredette, real name James Taft Fredette from Utah. He, of course, was drafted by the Bucks and then immediately traded to the Sacramento Kings. He, on the 11th, so last Sunday in China, where he plays for the Shanghai Sharks of the Chinese Basketball Association, dropped 75 points in a game against the Bikans, against Bikong, and that included 40 points alone in the fourth quarter. This is the second time Jimmer Fredette has scored 70 points in a losing effort in the Chinese Basketball League, where he's been playing for 3 years. Like I said, he was the 10th overall pick by the Bucks in 2011. He is known by the nickname the Lonely God in China.
No way.
And so, and I have to give credit to Dan Patrick. This was actually, I was listening to his show one day, and he interviews Jimmer Fredette every once in a while. When Jimmer Fredette came out of college, he was a very polarizing figure. He shot a ton, and he was shooting from 40 feet away. The guy was draining threes from anywhere half court and beyond. And he's a great interview. And they were talking to him, and he's over in China, and he has to get his internet through an American source, because otherwise state-run media, he can't watch American basketball games as much as he would like. Anyways, so Dan Patrick was talking to him, and this was right after he had scored like 50 points in a game. Again, this guy's averaging 38 points a game over there. And so as he hangs up with Jimmer Fredette after the interview, he turns to the leisureman, the first and second row, bro, and says, he just shakes his head and he goes, and Dellavedova still has a job in this league. He's like, can't somebody get Jimmer Fredette over here and give him a job? And I'm like, why not? Let's do it, Bucks.
Give him a chance. Let's just
load him up with 3-point shooters and open up that lane for Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, to just flash and run to the hoop and throw it down with monster truck force. John Lee, that is what I've got for you on the Bucks this week.
Jeez. Beautiful.
And of course, next week, look out for Aaron's solo podcast. Why isn't Jimmer Fredette playing in America?
Where in the world is Jimmer Fredette?
It's just going to be a total Jimmer web Fredette series.
Whatever. What was his nickname?
The Lonely God.
The Lonely God.
The Lonely God. Yes. Thank you. So that, of course, compliments of all Shanghai Sharks information, compliments of ESPN.com.
That was the greatest, Aaron. I really appreciate the depth you crawled to pull that all in. That was amazing. I'll tell you the one thing I was telling my brother. We were going to the Packer game last week, and the one thing I said, I want Giannis to do for games is I want him to give small little gifts before the games to, like, opposing teams, and then always, you know, finish by saying something like, you know, like, beware the Greeks and their gifts. And again, that was like a 5-person joke there, but it was worth having it, and I'm glad I got it in there. So there, it's my show. I can do what I want.
That's right. The game is on this podcast. Yes,
it is good times. The thing we're going to end with, though, is we're going to end with happy uptime things. We're going to end with the Badger football game against Purdue, in which the Badgers were getting 4 points in this game against Purdue. The last time they were projected to lose like this, I believe, was it Orton was the quarterback? And he had the fumble play. It was Orton or Painter. I'm forgetting which quarterback it was. Had the fumble play that was picked up and returned for the touchdown, the game-winning touchdown against the Purdue Boilermakers. And it was Boiler Down this week. It was great out at Ross Aid Stadium, which is, by the way, Aaron, one of the stadiums with which I have stood on the field. That story is fun because when I went and stood on the field at Ross Aid, I was going down to the Big Ten championship game. I stopped in West Lafayette, which is not exactly on the way, but I thought it'd be fun to go there. But there was a wedding being held at the stadium that day.
So you not only got on the field, but you crashed this wedding.
No, the wedding wasn't even started yet, but everything was open.
The crasher.
The wedding wasn't on yet, but it was open to go on there. I've stopped by there twice. First time I couldn't get on the field, but I could go to the press box. Because the elevator is left wide open, and I was able to just go up the elevator into, like, the club level into the press box. It's like, oh, it's pretty cool. It's a fun stadium. It's really cool. I like the railroad tracks where the Purdue players walk back to their locker room at halftime. That's a really cool idea. And it's right in the middle of the campus, which is a fun little campus. It's got the statue of the engineer with his hammer above his head, you know, working something. It's a cool place. West Lafayette's a fun little town and everything there, but it is nice to beat them and nice to make sure that they know that they do not get to go into the top two of the Big Ten West. They get to hang back there with all the other also-rans like Minnesota and whatnot, and to prevent Purdue on senior day, in a game in which if they win, they go to a bowl game. To take all of that in for a team that already has a bowl game, already feels like the season is lost, and to come from behind. And here's the bigger apology, Aaron. The bigger apology is that I called
this
game.
I was going to say, you owe a big one here. I owed an apology for the Christian Yelich thing earlier, at least I was defending my team. Yeah. All right, go, John.
Yeah, no, I was dead wrong. I tweeted out Dagger at one point when the Badgers are down 11, I believe, because it was before the field goal that put it 14. Because there was nothing I had seen about this team at that point that led me to believe that this offense was going to score 2 touchdowns. Jonathan Taylor has been lighting it up this year. He's been doing great. This offensive line has not been as good as advertised, unfortunately. They've been good at times, but not consistent enough to be good all the time. And they did it. They ran the ball. And the other thing is that Christ figured some things out with Jack Cohn, and he said, let's get you comfortable. We're going to have you throw. And he was throwing 7- and 10-yard routes most of that second half and really owning that play. He was getting in rhythm. He was going back. This is what Aaron Rodgers should do, by the way. Better than Jack Cohn, by the way, but still.
Yeah,
go back.
Like 1,000 times better than Jack Cohn.
Absolutely. Go back 3 steps, plants, turns, throws. Hits the play in route. The Badgers have good receivers. They have not, you know, they have the sophomore year thing. Danny Davis, AJ Taylor, Kendrick Pryor, the guys they have back there. They also have the redshirt freshman Ferguson at the tight end spot. Penniston every now and then when he's on the play too. Ferguson looks amazing. He's going to be really good for a couple of years here. But having all those guys with their great hands. And Danny Davis, by the way, if you didn't start watching the videos, if you didn't watch the videos coming out of spring camp 2 years ago, then you maybe didn't know this was coming, but the rest of us saw that coming. That catch, and you don't call it an Odell Beckham catch because, by the way, people were doing it before Odell did it, and Danny Davis did it better because there was a guy on his hip, and he went up, and he pulled that ball in for that catch. That catch, that was amazing, and he kept doing it. He got another touchdown to tie the game, And then Jonathan Taylor took over. That offensive line refused to lose in that overtime. That was one of the best games I've watched. And I say it because they won, but it was also just an amazing.
Because it would have been the worst game you've ever seen in your life if it would have been the other way.
No. It wouldn't have been the worst because it still would have been exciting, but I would have felt crushed. But it wouldn't have been the worst 15, game.
59 donut,
Losing, yeah. But seeing this team play the longest overtime they've played, which is three. But and this is exactly the thing. Is my point that I've said several times, and Aaron disagrees with me vehemently, the college football overtime is so much more exciting than the NFL overtime. It just
is. I agree.
It's amazing.
What?
You've told me.
I thought we agreed on overtime.
Oh, okay. I thought you were against me on this. A lot of people are against me on this. College football overtime is amazing. You have the 25, so you could kick a field goal. Go ahead and kick a field goal. Other team's going to get a touchdown. And you get that ball. Like, the Badgers had it perfect. I was so excited getting that the coin toss win. So it's like, oh, yeah, Purdue's got to go first. They get, you know, and then we get to, follow them and all that. But they got that touchdown right away. Badgers go down, get a touchdown. Next drive, they go down, work their way in. Another touchdown. And then Purdue does the most just gut-wrenching plays. They had that ridiculous 15-yard pass to Moore, who that kid is amazing. If you have not been watching Purdue football, he is the rookie of the year over Martinez, because that kid should have been tackled five times and just didn't go down after he caught that ball on just a three-yard look and just took it 15 yards by himself. And then the next play, of course, in the third overtime, no, I guess it was the second overtime or whatever. Second overtime, they just threw the one pass right to the corner of the end zone on the very first play. Badgers go down and score. And then they held Purdue to the field goal and everything, and it was just Jonathan Taylor taking over after that. He just had the game of his life, 321 yards, which, by the way, is only good for the third best Badgers football rushing game. And I was at the Melvin Gordon game. The 408. I was at that game because I went on vacation with my children and my wife, and my brother Mike, who is a Nebraska graduate, watched my dog. And as a gift, we decided my brother Dan and his wife and my wife and I and Mike would all go to the Badger Nebraska game, and I would buy the tickets as a thank you, Mike. You get to watch a Nebraska game live. And Melvin Gordon went up for 408 yards and just ruined his day. It was the worst gift I've ever given him, I think. But we had a great weekend anyhow. But, yeah, this game was amazing.
What was number two?
Number two, Ron Dane had, was it 328? Like 328, I think they said. I saw the graphic at some point. But, yeah, it was an incredible game. Of course, his yardage is aided by the fact that he only had 251 yards at the end of regulation.
Right.
And then got to play some overtimes where it was 25 yards up every overtime to play. They did enough. And by the way, here's the thing. Here's the people that need to mention. Jonathan Taylor, who, again, every time I don't say Jonathan Taylor Thomas, that is a victory for me because my brain wants to. But Van Ginkel played a heck of a game. Two sacks, 10 tackles, and the forced fumble that prevented a touchdown that turned into a Badger possession. That one right at the beginning where it looked like maybe Purdue could get that momentum and just carry that game away. And he just never gave up on that play and had that rip, punch, forced fumble, and the ball went through the end zone.
Yes, that was awesome.
That was an incredible play. And I've been going on for a while here because that game was incredible, and I was losing my mind. Well, as a UW graduate, obviously this is something that was incredible for me to watch. Having had season tickets while I was at UW for the 3 years of law school and everything. But, you know, guys, I know, Aaron, you were hunting. You didn't get to watch this. But, Lee, I mean, this game was incredible to watch. It was just exciting and an adrenaline.
It was very, very up and down. And the one thing that I wanted to talk about was that the Doak Walker Award finalist names came out today. And they said it's a tight race. And Jonathan Taylor was obviously listed, but how on earth can that be a tight race? I mean, he is leading he's leading college football in rushing yards, but it's not even close. It's by 300 yards.
Yeah, it's been a tight race, obviously. It's been something where I think that Jonathan Taylor has been definitely playing better than the other people around him and better than the other running backs that have been going up so far. But it's something where I think maybe it's they're going to be looking at it and saying that maybe the Big Ten is down this year, and that's something that's definitely been hurting him as we've been going through the year. But we are really out of time at this point, and thank you so much to Lee Chekovich for joining us this week. Make sure you go listen to him. His show is very good, the Wisco Sports Show. Wherever you can find that is very good. I definitely listen to it. He's got good production. He's been doing a good job. He definitely pays attention, and it's great to have him with us, and we definitely thank him very much for joining us this week, and we will definitely have him back. So, again, thank you, Lee, for joining us this week. You can follow us again. I'm at jbarn54. Aaron is at Cheddar Talk, and you can follow the show at ScottyJohnny1. That's the number one at the end of ScottyJohnny. And you can email us at ScottyJohnny@gmail.com. And remember, of course, as you're listening to us, wherever you are, whether you're on the town or on the go, that it is always on Wisconsin.